Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. This week I'm joined by my colleagues at FrontStretch.com, Mike Neff and Zach Catanzaretti, as well as the driver of the number 72 TriStar Motorsports Chevrolet, Corey LaJoy, as we're here to break down an eventful but rather racy all-star race. But first, this weekend is your chance to win a signed visor from Ryan Truex. Yep, that's right. All you have to do is play our $5 contest at FanDuel.com/FrontStretch, and the top prize is a signed visor from the younger brother of the reigning Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion. Sign up now and support Ryan Truex and support our site with this $5 game, as well as your chance to win. That's FanDuel.com/FrontStretch, your new daily fantasy racing destination. Now, Corey, the last time you were on this podcast, NASCAR had just announced the package for the All-Star Race. You competed in the Open on Saturday night. So from the driver's seat, how did you like this package?
As a driver, I hated it because it took a cup car, which is normally hard to drive, which I feel like it should be hard to drive since it's the highest class of stock car in the world, and it made it as challenging to drive as a Richard Petty driving experience car where you can pay $300 and make 10 laps. So I didn't like that fact. I think that the race was okay, and I think that there's a foundation that could be tweaked on that could be a decent package for some of the really crappy racetracks like Michigan and Pocono and Indy, where you know, race cars don't really put on a good show. But for the most part, I feel like cup cars should be hard to drive, not easy to drive. That's my opinion, because if I can do it, you know, if somebody can do my job just as good as I can, because I can't do anything more than hold it wide open, then why hire somebody off talent anymore? Because there are a couple guys that are still hired with talent, right? But there'll be none if you fast forward 3-4 years from now and they run this package every week.
Enough. What was your take on the package?
Yeah, and like I said, I liked it because I thought it was a good foundation, like Corey mentioned. I think the concept is good as far as getting a car slowed down a little, because I think it provides the drivers an opportunity to put themselves in some more, I don't know what the proper word is, but put them in a position that is less than comfortable. And when you're doing 210 into turn one and two, you aren't really prone to putting yourself in uncomfortable positions very often, because if the slightest thing goes wrong, you end up wrecking. Where Saturday night, I saw a whole bunch of guys that got themselves way out of shape and were able to save it, putting themselves in some uncomfortable situations because they felt like they had more control over the car. And so I don't like the idea of it just being put it on the mat and never lift. I don't like that aspect of it. That's why I never like plates. But I feel like if we're at least starting down this road to slow them down some, to allow these guys to put them in some more untenable situations that in the long run produce more exciting racing, then I'm all for it. But as far as plates go, I hate plates, and I wish we would figure out some way to get rid of them on all racetracks.
And Zach, before we get back to Corey, I'm just curious how you felt the package worked.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have to give these tracks credit. They've made a lot of changes for the fans' sake and when it comes to their enjoyment, and many in the interest of competition and keeping the All-Star Race specialty. And I think we saw a lot of that on Saturday. To me, Charlotte has kind of stood out with what changes they can make with the Volvo and now Play Racing. I mean, they're really putting a lot of effort into making their racing stand out. So, you know, I definitely appreciate the action. I enjoyed it. It was inherently interesting to me because it was something new, and we really hadn't seen anything really like it, you know, before. The Indy was an experiment in itself with the Xfinity last year, but that's just so much different. So I was definitely looking for more passing, and we saw that side by side. Going in, again, it's tough to put expectations down, but I expected maybe some more single file. And to me, like to Mike's point a little bit, the driver seemed more able to make those passes, and obviously everyone was staying close. Outside of Fardwick, no one really got out to more of a half a second lead or so. That four car really just showed pretty incredible speed. just overall, the leader was a tough catch, it seemed like. It seemed like after the first few laps, after one of the stage breaks and the restart, the leader was pretty tough to pass. And comparing it to the Indy 500 package for this year, it's kind of the opposite. For the 500, we expect those top two positions to be just back and forth. I mean, just savage racing up front. But once you get mid-pack, 5th, 6th, 10th, 15th, they might be stuck. And with this package, it was, for NASCAR, it's kind of the opposite. When you got out to the lead, you were fairly able to kind of control the draft, go up and up to the bottom and to the top. And if you were back mid-pack, you were kind of stuck. So, I mean, Almendinger did prove that you can go to the back near to the front. He started in the back in the All-Star race and then at the first stage in the top five. So we saw a little bit of everything. But, yeah, I definitely feel both sides. And here on Coy's side, it was interesting because he himself got to feel a little bit of it. So, yeah, I'm kind of right there in the middle. But for the most part, I was really happy what I saw because the All-Star race usually doesn't have as much unique action. And this year, I came out and I was happy with what I saw.
And, Corey, at the end of the day, we're part of the entertainment business, right? So with there's so much side-by-side racing compared to other Charlotte races, whether it's the 600 or the 500 in the fall. Doesn't that ultimately put on a better show?
Obviously, the fans have – people in general have changed how they the way they consume any sort of sport or any sort of news or anything. They want it right now. Right? They want to look at their phones, look at the highlights. So everybody wants to talk about the good old days. You know, let's just make it like the good old days, right? Well, the good old days, there was two sumbitches on the lead lap. Everybody else was 3-4 laps down. Like, and now, and there was 150,000 people in the stands. Now, we've got 30 cars on the lead lap, and it's still not good enough. And there's 40,000 people in the stands. So, obviously, the people don't really value what they used to value 20 years ago, which is unfortunate because it used to be they used to watch these daredevils drive these cars around as fast as possible, and you know, they wrecked because the wheel fell off. That's what happened. Now you don't get as many parts failures. You don't get as much disparity because the cars are all running so close speed wise that you don't get a lot of passing because everything's optimized the most it can be. So. You know, it's just the transition of the sport and it's a transition of how people want to get their action right now. You know, they don't want to wait 4 hours for the Coke 600. They want 120 passes for the lead, which at what point is slowing the cars down? Is it too slow? I mean, it's 140 miles an hour. Is it 140? Is it 120 miles an hour? Or do we ride around 90 miles an hour like a bandolero? Like what? You keep slowing them down until everybody, we run four wide. Like, what's the cutoff? So, I don't know. I thought about it a lot. I feel like if you do give some motor back, and have to actually have guys lift more than we did on Saturday night, then you get the gap back and you won't be able to run as close anymore. So, if NASCAR wants guys three rows deep, or you know, three wide, three. Freaking 10 rows deep, that like that they could have that, or they could put soft tires and low downforce and watch the cars run 210 miles an hour and watch the guys really drive them and really expose the guys who can't drive as well, which would be my 2 cents, but that's not worth very much. So the people who are half-assed drivers kind of like the package because they can hide behind the quality of their equipment. You know, the guys that aren't Kevin Harvick or Kyle Busch, now they can actually keep pace with Kevin Harvick or Kyle Busch because they can hold a little wide open when they had to actually use a little bit of brake and a little bit of throttle management. They can't. So, but I make my living being able to drive better than the guys I race with. But when I'm running wide open and those guys are smoking me because they have more motor than I do, there's not much room for me to gain there. So that was pretty frustrating, but you know, it depends what hatch you're looking at. Obviously, whatever we got to do to put fans in the seats is option number one. Because if that's the case, and if we don't do that, nobody's getting paid. Nobody's getting anything going forward. So make that number one priority.
Neff, I think Corey brings up a good point with the length of the races and how slow the cars go. Because obviously, the slower they go, the longer the races are going to take. And like yeah. Corey said, there's not a lot of fans in the stands right now. So, I mean, NASCAR's kind of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
Yeah, you're in a situation where, and we talked about this a little bit on PRN Pit Reporters that's coming out this week that I got to be on, about possibly shortening the 600. And I know I'm in the vast minority of this thing that I think all cup races should be 500 miles. But in reality, in the modern world in which we live, where everything is in 140 characters and 15-second sound bites, there should still be a handful of races at least that are special and are at least a throwback to tradition. And well, that's why I think that you don't mess with the Daytona 500, you don't mess with the Southern 500, you don't mess with the Brickyard 400, and you don't mess with the 600. I mean, that's just, I think that's the four biggest races we got going. There's those who would argue that Bristol Night Race should be in there as well. But if we're going to have to, I guess the problem is 500 miles used to be a test of man and machine. And the quote I used on today's thing was, the 600 will be a test of men because it's not a test of machine anymore except for Corey LaJoie's engines. That's the only one that's low engines on a regular basis still.
Yeah.
But
well, hey, to your point, Nev, that's a good point. I've been thinking about it lately too. I feel like the races where they go, we go to twice, Daytona, Martinsville, fill in the blank, right? Richmond, Charlotte, wherever we go to twice, have one race maybe the traditional length, and the other race a maybe split them up into two heat races and a 250 mile show or something like that. So the event from the time the people get there to the time the people leave is the same thing, because you get to sell the same amount of hot dogs to pay for it all, right? You get sub coats. So you keep people there, but they get a lot more breaks in the action and something a little bit shaked up. So I feel like that's could be an option. I don't know if they thought about that. But
yeah, I mean, and I agree with that. That's why I was a big proponent of stage racing, because I felt like it forced guys to abandon the David Pearson mindset. Because, you know, in the mid-2000s on, everybody figured out the Pearson way, where you just rode around conserving your stuff till the end and then you took a shot. And it didn't lead to good racing for the majority of the race. And again, you didn't have Cale Yarborough and Dale Earnhardt out there where they just went hammered down the whole time. And now that we have the stages back in it, you've kind of got that getting back into it a little bit. And I agree with you. I think it would be cool if, like you said, we go to Pocono, run a 400-miler for the first time, and do two 200-milers a second time. And then you're just going to get into the debates about do we pay full points or half points and things like that. But that's something we can approach once we come up with that mindset that we're going to do it. But I agree that I feel like there should be a mix, because kind of like I feel like we need to mix up the schedule more. We need to have some scenarios where we have long races that are, you know, that are more a test of the men, and short races where it's more of a sprint and more of a test of the ability of the machine. And I think in the long run, if you spread them out over the whole 36 race schedule, I think it could lead to a lot more interest in the sport.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely a fan of all variables. Like Mike and Coy said, I mean, I love that there's short tracks and a dirt race and then the truck series and plates and, you know, asphalt tracks, concrete, short, like all this, I love it. And what we saw Saturday, that's just a different type of racing, similar to Daytona, but you actually have to turn the car a little bit more, not as high as banking. And I definitely enjoy that idea. I'm a lot like them. I don't want to touch those crown jewel races. And I think that's a solid idea. I mean, as long as the schedule is variable and you really get to see every type of racing that NASCAR can offer, I'm definitely all for it.
Now, I'm curious to get your guys' take on this, because you see, like, Chicagoland Speedway, their social media account was tweeting out the other night how they wanted this package, and Eddie Gossage from Texas Motor Speedway was tweeting out similar things. Corey, where do you feel like this package should go if it goes anywhere in the future?
Michigan, Indy, Pocono, Texas, because Texas is so fast right now, you're literally on the ragged edge by yourself, let alone behind or beside a car. I don't think this package entirely, like, either it needs something. It needs a little bit more work, I think. If they need it to where the car behind gets a bigger tow than it was the Charlotte, because they didn't get enough suck and create enough momentum to clear the guy they were trying to pass. And the leader was also able to control the lines too much, I felt like. So, is it a perfect package? I don't think anybody thinks that it's a perfected package for sure, but and I want to see it. I'd like to see it in Michigan. I think Michigan probably be the best place for it, just because you're kind of taking that, because Michigan's still a downforce track and a motor track. So if you can take those two things out of it and kind of pack everybody up, and it would essentially be, it would be a Daytona where handling is a little more important. So I think that'd be, I don't know if they're looking into that, but I think that would be cool.
Yeah, I was talking to a driver in the Xfinity Series a couple weeks ago, because they are doing this at Pocono, Michigan over the next couple weeks in that series.
For Xfinity?
Yeah. So at Pocono, you're probably still going to haul ass, right, into turn one, because it's the longest straightaway in NASCAR, regardless.
Dude, those cars are so slow.
Really?
I mean, you'll go, I don't know, 165.
Oh, really?
Car at least. I mean, so it won't be much more than that. But, you know, because, I mean, Charlotte's probably one of that. I mean, cup cars, we were going 205, 208 in the one, and we were going a blazing 158 miles an hour in the one this weekend.
But do you think it would really work at Pocono? Because it's, I mean, I guess it worked at Indy in Xfinity last year.
Well, the places where it's, you get dirty air so bad, and those corners are so short and fast where you can't get within two or three cars of anybody, because you need all that clean air in your car. So if you get rid of that, I feel like it would be definitely better.
And in a place like Michigan, I'm just curious, do you feel like it would actually be like a Daytona or Talladega, where it's kind of more of a pack, like big pack?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a pack of Charlotte, it's definitely a pack of Michigan, because the problem with Charlotte is you could never get wound up enough to create enough overall pack speed to get runs, you know, because you're only going that 160 miles an hour. But you go to Michigan and the pack's going to get momentum built up and you're going to be going 180, 185, and then you can actually get some slingshot moves.
And Zach Neff, I'm curious where you'd like to see the package also.
Yeah, to me, Michigan's definitely a solid idea. I mean, when I saw this, that was the first track I thought of. And I thought I heard some other driver, I mean, just even right after the race, they just felt it. And Michigan was a track that came up. And, you know, I'm interested to see how it works out for Xfinity. The cars are a lot different. I mean, even going into Pocono, like Corey said, that the speeds are just going to be so drastically different, even with this package. So I think that would be a great pick. I know Texas would be really interesting because it's such a one-lane track. To me, that's already a wild race because everyone's so desperate to get to the bottom, and we've seen a lot of cautions there, and restarts are wild. So why not add plates? Yeah, I've been thinking of what tracks would work out. I think Charlotte was a solid first pick, especially for a non-points race, and that's why I was happy to see that it wasn't a disaster. It wasn't even close. I mean, we saw a good race, so it gave me some potential for the future. So yeah, Michigan's number one for me, and there's definitely a few others. Maybe I don't know. I was about to say Auto Club, but I actually like how that is, how rough and bumpy it is. I like that they get to kind of run around there. So yeah, Mike, if you have any other ideas, I know Michigan's number one for me.
Yeah, I would like to see it as a variable. So we go to Texas twice. So one Texas race, we run it, and one Texas race, we don't. You go to Kansas twice. We run it at one of the Kansas races. We go to Vegas twice. We run it once there. I'm with you on Michigan, just because I think the configuration of that track, and it's kind of like Charlotte, where, I mean, Charlotte this time, tires started to make a little difference, so I'm anxious to see what happens at the 600. But Michigan, I mean, we're still running those Flintstone hard tires pretty much up there. and they don't really make a difference. So I could see Michigan for both of them. I don't know, Indy and Pocono, again, maybe one of the Pocono races to give it a different aspect to it. I feel like, let's see what else we do with this thing, because again, I'm not a fan of the plate idea, but if we're starting to slow them down in other means, then I'm game to see it at some other places. But my vote would be throw it in as a variable at places we go to twice and run it one of the two times we go there.
Now, guys, we're like 20 minutes into this podcast, and we really haven't discussed anything about Kevin Harvick yet, who won the race the other night, and he won three of the four stages. Corey, I've asked this to a couple of the drivers, because Harvick's won the past two weekends, two points races anyway, and they kind of laugh when I ask this, but what can stop Harvick right now?
I don't know. I don't think anybody else does either. They do it. No, it's just, they got it all working. They got they've got a good feel for Kevin. They've got good motors in those Rush 8s Fords, and they got good bodies. I feel like their Ford aero balance is probably the best with rear and side force out of the other two manufacturers. And they just. They're on. They got momentum, and they're rolling. They're, you know, once Kevin Harvick gets some confidence and he gets that eye of the tiger, better watch out, because that guy brings it every week.
Yeah, Zach, this is pretty scary. He's won 5 of the 12 points races, and now an exhibition race as well.
Yeah,
that was the record that dated back to Gordon, I think, in '97. I mean, and we know how incredible Gordon was in the mid to late '90s. Yeah, I mean, Corey just, you kind of jumped on it with just Ford overall, but Harvick, man, he's in such a special place. I mean, I thought this would be a good opportunity race for someone else, and we almost saw it with Daniel Suarez. He won the Open, and he was up there in the top two. And Hamlin, I mean, he ended up kind of messing up that inside lane, and perhaps that kind of cost him, but overall, the Ford car had the best car once again. Once he got out front, I think it was the first or second stage, I think the first one, he got to the lead, and he actually held a pretty decent lead over the 78. And I think Kyle Busch was in third, and he was getting kind of frustrated and tried to get around Truex. But I really think that Ford was just that quick. He held it like about a half a second lead the whole time. And we didn't really see anyone else actually get out by themselves a little bit. He was the only one. And he ended up getting a win. His first one in a long time in the event. But he, as I said, he's in an incredibly special place. Especially someone like him who's been around for 17 years now in the Cup Series. He's been through a lot of struggles, but 2009 especially, that was probably the worst season of his career. He barely made the top 20 points and turned it around in 2010, and ever since then he's never gone winless. It's just incredible when him and Ronnie Childers and everyone else has done. That team has really come together, and they're winning everything. We have no clue what's going to stop them, or how many wins he's going to have to the end of the year. He's on track to 15. I brought that up, but it's just math. I don't think he's going to get 15. I think it's eventually going to slow down, and maybe the Toyotas will kind of catch up through the summer. But, man, I mean, if someone's going to get double-digit wins at this point in the year, holy crap, how can it not be him?
Yeah, I mean, if you're picking somebody to have double digits, Harvick's obviously your choice. I felt like the dominance that he showed Saturday night highlighted the fact that Stuart Haas has got something that they have figured out mechanically with these cars. Because you threw a completely different aero package at it, and they were still head and shoulders above the rest. So if it was something they were doing with aero, then maybe they caught lightning in a bottle. But if it's something that they've got figured out mechanically, it doesn't matter what aero you're going to put on it. The aero is an equalizer, and that mechanical advantage is still going to rise to the top. But, yeah, Harvick's got it going on for sure. I feel like it's interesting to me that he has kind of peaked later in his career than most people do. It seems to me like about 2012 or so is when we really saw him become a force. I mean, he always was a threat. He would always win some races. But I feel like in the last 5 to 6 years, he's really become a force and a constant threat for championships and wins. And
he went from driving a 10th place car to a damn top three car every week.
Yeah, that doesn't suck. But in the long run, I feel like, and we all know that this sport is cyclical, and you're going to end up having you know, peaks and valleys, and they're at a peak right now. At some point, the Chevys are going to figure this thing out. I don't know if it when it happens, but I feel like it's going to. And in all honesty, the Toyotas aren't that far off. So it's just a matter of if one of them, you know, whether it's Gibbs or whether it's Hendrick, finds something to get you back even or a little ahead of the Fords, then we put an end to this. But until that happens, I feel like it could be like last year. I feel like it could be Harvick wins and dominates all the way up till we get to Daytona before we finally see somebody unseat him.
And Neff, I'm going to throw this back to you, and then you other two can comment. But it seems like it's kind of a year where, I mean, to beat Harvick, they're going to have to beat themselves. And we've seen in the past that they have, like with the pit crew.
Yeah, we've seen that in the past. But this year, that's not even really been a means of beating them. I mean, he's had two or three wins this year where they had pit road issues, and they still came back and won it. And other guys that have been stepping on themselves and not getting there, it seems like Larson's the one that's in that group this year. It seems like they've shot themselves in the foot two or three times when they had cars that were capable of winning. So we, at this point, I feel like that four is so far ahead that they can even make mistakes and overcome them better. Then, like Corey mentioned earlier, we've got 30 cars that are all under an umbrella, relatively the same competition. And if you make a misstep, it's really going to cost you. But those guys seem to be able to overcome it, even if they do make those missteps.
Yeah, he hit it on the head there with overcoming mistakes. That's just one of the top things, especially in the Cup Series, that you really have to nail down. And it wasn't long ago that Harvick was finishing second almost every week. I think he had 8 or 9 straight top two finishes, and most of them were second, and he was just known as Mr. Second Place for a little bit there, and Kyle Larson has kind of picked that up. But yeah, they're overcoming mistakes even when they have pit road issues. Harvick has the speed, and Ronnie's got the knowledge, and just the car is just epic right now, and they're able to come back almost every time. So as I said, a special place, and I'm fascinated to see how far I can continue, because when you're able to actually have issues throughout the race and it doesn't even affect where your finishing position is, that's pretty incredible.
And Corey, I don't have a really good transition point for this, but when you look at the All-Star race as a whole, obviously the plates were an equalizer, but as we've mentioned earlier in the podcast, Daniel Suarez, AJ Allmendinger both, you know, ran really well. How much of that do you think led to them having experience in the open with 40 and 50 laps respectively?
Good point. Didn't hurt anything. I'm telling you, the cars are so easy to drive, it didn't matter if you had 300 laps of practice or no laps of practice, you just held wide open. And once you get in the pack, you had to lift a little bit in turn three just because it's a tighter radius corner and it's a little slick over there. So, I mean, they knew what to expect. That's probably why AJ jumped to the front so quick in that first segment. Just because he knew he could run the top and he could stay wide open while the other guys were still trying to search around and see where their cars were. He already had, you know, like you said, he already had 50 laps worth of seat time and figure out where his car worked the best. So yeah, he was able to jump up the guys pretty quick.
And Zach, I was still surprised with AJ though, because we haven't seen him run that well in a mile and a half in a long time.
We haven't, and mix that with his hatred. His downright vicious hatred for plate racing. He was probably the very last person I expected to really peak in this type of racing. Yeah, I think he started a ninth for the Open, and he really went towards that top four pretty quickly. And during the race, he started all the way in the back, and he finished top five in the first stage. And he pulled off one of the ballsiest passes of the night, in my opinion, when he went to the, like, I guess Logano thought he was on the outside lane. AJ showed him what the outside lane really was, and he passed him around, and that was for fourth place at the time. So he ended up hitting the wall, which didn't surprise me. And he ended up still getting a top 10 there. But, yeah, I was really, really surprised that he rose to the occasion. Even Chris Buescher got a top five in the Open. So that it was just an overall good Saturday for JTG. They definitely need it. A mile and a half has been really tough this year. And overall, I expected them to be higher in points than they are. Especially AJ being the veteran of the team. So a really, really good night for him. I think him and that team were really looking for a solid night and to win something, to win the Open, and to get into the big race. Though they didn't come home with $1 million, it was still quite a few reasons for them to smile.
Neff?
It was, it was interesting to say the least that Dinger threw it up there. I mean, you gotta give it to him that he had the balls to throw it up there, and he took advantage of having that limited experience from the Open. Suarez is an interesting story, I think, because the first year he was in Cup full time, every racetrack we went back to, I'm pretty sure he finished better than he did the previous time through, and he continued to show that he was learning and just getting better. And then we started this year, and it felt like he took a step back. But for whatever reason, the last three or four races, it seems like he started to get it figured out again. And I feel like he's one of those guys that's going to be a – I don't want to call him a surprise winner, because I think when you're in Joe Gibbs equipment, you ought to be able to win. But I feel like he's one that a lot of people don't think is going to win this year, and it's probably going to end up notching a win.
And, Corey, with this package, at, like, the plate races of Talladega, Daytona, obviously it's a big equalizer. But you're saying that the cars are so easy to drive, so it can't be that much of an equalizer now, right, for the smaller teams?
Well, you don't get the huge pack that takes the drag off my car as much as, you know, when you're going 200 miles an hour, or you're only going 155. So I'm not able to really keep track. I say me, like somebody that has less, if you don't have a, you know, a factory motor, right, like a Hendrick motor, ECR, Roush Yates, or a TRD motor, if you have a secondhand builder, then you're down 30, 40 horsepower, and you won't be in the same race, which we're not already, but that would make it worse for my case, because then I won't be able to outdrive the guys that normally can beat, because I can, you know, work the throttle and, you know, set my car up a little bit looser so I can carry a little more speed. All that stuff would be thrown to the wayside if this package just allows everybody to run wide open. So I don't personally want to see it, but the sport going forward, I feel like that might be the right move. So.
But Zach, like you said, JTG ran well with this package.
Yeah, it opened it up a little bit, at least, I felt. But, yeah, just, you know, pretty much what Poy said there, there's only so much it can help unless you get a Talladega or Daytona where it's a legit pack and anybody can really get up for the top 10 at least for a little bit. But, yeah, to me, the top teams are always going to rise, and we didn't really see it. I mean, we did see it with Harvick, but we saw it with the Penske's and the Gibbs as well, with Logano and Hamlin at the end. Larson did very, very well. So, to me, whatever type of racing you get, unless you're invert in the field for the last lap, you're always going to have the top teams near the front.
Neff, we talked off the record earlier, and you wanted to talk a little bit about the qualifying tires now.
Yeah, I just thought that's something interesting that fans need to be aware of, that NASCAR put out a rule update. As you no longer have to start the race on the tires that you qualified on, but you're going to take one set of tires from practice and qualifying into the race. So you basically are saying that whether you start the race on them or you switch to them during the race at some point in time, you're going to have a set of tires that are scuffed. And as part of the rule, it says if for some reason you do not put any laps on your qualifying tires, then the set that you bring over to the race has to be scuffed tires. And it makes me curious. I mean, we hear about these guys playing games and intentionally failing qualifying tech so that they don't have to put laps on their tires when they're at a really abrasive track, which I think is a bunch of crap. I can't imagine anybody's going to intentionally not try and qualify, so they're going to have the worst pit selection in the whole deal. But if for some reason they don't, it prevents them from having an extra set of sticker tires, that they have to take some scuff tires into the race with them. But it's just an interesting idea. If you get somebody that has a bad qualifying effort or something, and you're on a track that is abrasive on tires, do you switch to stickers when other guys are going to stay on qualifying tires, or vice versa? If everybody else is switching to stickers and you're back in 25th, do you take a shot that you can make three lap scuffs actually last long enough to keep you from getting put a lap down before you come in and change them. It's just a piece of strategy that we haven't had before, and I kind of enjoy the idea that it gives the team something they could choose to start the race.
And Corey, from the driver's seat, how much of a difference will that make? Obviously, at the tracks that wear tires faster or quicker, it probably makes more of a difference.
Yeah, it depends where, obviously, like you said. There's usually about a 3/10 of a second fall off anywhere you go. So it's not enough to where if you start on 3-lap scuffs or 5-lap scuffs, if you make it all the way to the final round, where you would go a lap down if the guys were on stickers. You would certainly get eat up if you were in the top 10 and you had to start them scuffs. So, but, you know, it just kind of takes the guesswork out of it and lets everybody start on stickers and that keeps all the bitching down to a minimum, I guess. they're complaining about that.
Now, Zach Neff, do you have any final thoughts before we get into predictions here?
It's just one of those more mid-season changes. You see a lot of them, and I think it'll pretty much even out after a little bit. It's just those little adjustments everyone's going to have to make. But I don't see it would have a significant effect on the race.
Cool. I did tech talk with Trent Owens this week, and he said he would like to see unique rule packages for the different types of tracks that we have. He said he doesn't feel like one aero rule package works for Martinsville, Bristol, Dover, Charlotte, you know, Michigan. That you need to have some variety. He would like to see a unique aero package for short tracks, for road courses, for intermediates, and then for the speedways. And I kind of like that myself. I mean, it gives teams an opportunity, and you may end up with something like the old days where DEI focused extra hard on super speedway stuff at the expense of some of their other packages. And it just gives you some variety. I'm sure Tad Geschechter, when he hears that on Friday, is going to have a coronary, because if they actually did that, you know, he's going to be stuck building some extra cars that he can't really afford. But it's a good thought. I mean, again, if we're going to start experimenting a little bit and trying to come up with a way, and it's been my contention for a while, and I'm positive it's why Tony Stewart retired, that the driver couldn't really make much of a difference anymore, because it's so engineering heavy a sport that the driver, if you're out there and you have a 10th place car, maybe you can finish 6th and maybe you finish 13th. Where when Smoke came in, he could take a 10th place car and win or be top 3 with it. And I would like to see something where we keep playing with this and throw teams curveballs, so we end up seeing their ingenuity and actually seeing some variety in the teams that are running up front.
Now, I don't have another good transition. However, this is the biggest, arguably, race weekend of the year with the Indy 500, Coke 600. But let's start with the Xfinity Series pick. Zach, who do you got winning the Xfinity Series race this weekend at Charlotte?
Well, the big guy's running Kyle Busch, but I kind of want to think outside the box. I think I know who Neff's picking, but I'm going to go back Frank Keselowski. He's a 3-time winner in the race. He only has one finish outside the top 10 since 2008. Now, top 10's not winning, but to me, that was just a pretty cool stat, and he's won there a lot. I mean, I think he runs through every year, so I'll pick Brad Keselowski now 22.
Neff?
I told you before we started, for Xfinity, I am going with Kyle Busch. I just don't – he is so good at Charlotte in general, and when he's in that Xfinity series, it's just – it suits his driving style so well, I can't go against him in the Xfinity Series.
Corey, who you got?
Is Larson running?
McMurray.
No, Kenny McMurray.
I don't really know. I ain't
Austin Cedric's left to the 12th.
I'm not going to go with him.
he ain't winning.
Not even close. He'll be struggling to run 13th, probably. Hemric.
I think he ran well there last year, from what I remember. I'm going to go Allgaier. I say he gets redemption from his penalty at Dover. Now, Zach, you'll be in Indy, so talk for a minute about your experience at Indy, and I know this is a big race for you.
It is. It's a big race for everybody, the entire world. I've been honored to cover the race two of the last 3 years. This would be my third, and I'm definitely incredibly excited about it. Like a lot of people, it's been on the schedule for a long time. So I'll be leaving Thursday morning, so that's going to be a lot of fun. When it comes to picking out picks, it's a competitive field, I feel. I mentioned the aero kit early in the episode, and it's a lot different this year. The cars look pretty slick. There's no rear pods anymore. The rear tires are actually exposed, which is a little concerning, at least when you see the accidents we've had in the past. But when it comes to the speeds, I mean, Ed Carpenter, he hit 230 on his first qualifying lap, so that was pretty incredible. End up getting the pole again. But if I were to pick a race winner, it would definitely be in the Chevy camp. I believe they have 9 of the top 11 spots. Sebastian Bourdais with a Dale Coyne Racing in the top 5. He's pretty much the only Honda who I feel has been showing some solid speed. Neff gave me a little crap for going for the Penske gang, so I'll try to think outside the box. And Spencer Pigot has been one guy who I've been looking at. He's teammates with Danica Patrick and Ed Carpenter this year. He's an American. He's been in IndyCar for a little bit, but to me, he's just been one of those quiet guys. And he qualified 6th, just a hair above Danica. I believe they're on row 2 and 3. So just overall, I've been pretty impressed with what he's shown this year. And outside of Pigot, Andretti has really done very well in the 500 for years, but they've won it the last 3 of the last 4 years. But Marco is that top driver in 12th spot. So it would be incredible to see Elio win it, to get that 4th. He's been so close for so many years now to get that 4th. And he's starting, I believe, P8. So he was so good on the first day. It was pretty shocking to see him drop off for day 2. So he's starting a little further back. But if you're in that fast 9, you're getting a solid track position. So Elio to get his 4th would be great. Marco to get the Andretti's back in victory lane. So a lot of really, really cool stories, and I'm pumped for it. But to pick one guy, I'm actually going to go with Spencer Pigot. He would be a pretty solid story.
Well, Zach, you just went through half the field, so...
Paying attention. It's been a long month, bro.
Neff, I know the Indy 500 is a pretty big race for you growing up in Indy.
Absolutely, brother. I love the place. I love the race. I love the fact that it's the greatest spectacle in racing. I'm not going through the whole field.
Thank God.
I want to see Rossi get a second win. I want to pick him.
Corey?
Second.
I'm going to go Helio.
Helio. I'm going to take Scott Dixon. I know he went airborne last year, but I say he gets back to victory lane this year. Zach, what would that be, his third win there?
That would be his second. He's only won there once, and that was 10 years ago. So, yeah, everyone's shocked that he's only had one, but, yeah, he's been close many times. Fought Montoya a few years ago, which was epic. So, yeah, this will only be his second win, which is pretty surprising.
And, Zach, I'll throw it back to you for the Coke 600. Back to the regular package, so who do you think is going to win? Is it going to be Harvick?
No, well, probably. But I'm trying to think outside. So I'm going to go with Ryan Blaney. To me, just one of the semi-similar tracks. I mean, you can't really look at it in Atlanta to compare. So I looked at Vegas, and Blaney got the pole there, got top 5, and he's always been one of the best 1.5 mile racers. He's dominated a number of races this year, from Daytona, Bristol. I mean, he's just an all-around solid talent, and he stood out pretty well for Penske. So I think he's gonna get that first win of the year on Sunday.
No.
As much as I want to be on the Kyle Busch bandwagon, and I think he's gonna finally break the jinx at Charlotte, I'm actually going to go with Martin Truex to have another dominating performance in the 600.
Corey.
It's an interesting pick. I'm going to go on a limb here. I'm going to say the old Ford car this week.
Damn, wow.
What a limb you went on. I'm going to take...
I'm not picking 72, just so you know.
The what?
The 72.
Yeah, I don't recommend that.
At least he's honest. I'm going to take Kyle Larson, the last mile and a half race at Kansas. He probably should have won. As long as he can keep it out of the wall, I think Kyle Larson goes to victory lane this weekend in the Coke 600. Zach, Neff, any final thoughts before we sign off?
Yeah, biggest day in motorsports on Sunday. You wake up with Monaco, you have lunch in Indy, then you have, I think as Dale Walsh says, barbecue dinner at Charlotte for the 600. So it's going to be a blast of a day. If you live for racing, this is the day you live for. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Memorial Day is a very special day in America. We have a lot of love and respect to the military, especially in racing and especially in NASCAR. But the thing I always remind everybody about Memorial Day is this is for those people that paid the ultimate sacrifice. We have a lot of stuff on the 4th of July and Veterans Day and things like that where we commemorate all military folks. Memorial Day is specifically for those people that paid the ultimate sacrifice. So I just want to thank all of the families and the people that paid the ultimate price so that we can enjoy the freedom to watch the greatest day of racing this Sunday.
Of course.
Yeah, and racing does probably a better job than anybody. Obviously, the Indy 500 is all about being a patriot, but when I covered the Coke 600 once in 2016, I was absolutely blown away with all the helicopters that came in and all the American flags with the bagpipes and everything. It's just a really incredible feeling. So it just makes you be really proud to be a part of motorsports.
Yeah, very well said, guys. I went to one Coke 600. I think it was in 05. It was when Jimmy Johnson edged Bobby Labonte at the finish line. Growing up, I was a big Bobby Labonte fan, so that sucked. But yeah, the pre-race festivities at Charlotte always has two for the 600. So it's just so patriotic and so special. So I think we're in for a hell of a weekend of racing. Really appreciate Corey coming on tonight and helping us out with this podcast, get it done. So yeah, until next week where we review the 600, preview Pocono. We're back at Pocono already, Zach. We out.
Peace out.
Bye.